Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Mo Thugs movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. we got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though, what do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Get ready to rumble!
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. I had to throw that a little extra in there because we've got one of my favorite legends in boxing, the one and only Scotty the Bulldog Olsen. Scotty, how you doing today, brother?
Oh, I'm doing really, really well, Don. Thank you so much, Mr. Don McGuire, for having me again on The Fighter's Voice. I was blessed last time being able to talk to you, and of course, once again today.
You know, life is a beautiful thing, and I we've had talks about this off the air, but I think life is changing. I think people are evolving, and we necessarily always don't like the path or the avenue that it goes, but then you got old guys like us who we like to look back at the past and we like to pay relevance to those that made a difference in our lives, those that created an aspect in the sport that only they could. You know, Scotty, you were a tremendous champion in the sport. You created such a fan base, and I got to be honest with you, last night when I posted that you were going to be on the show, a good buddy of mine by the name of Dallas Cook and others commented on there that you were a tremendous fighter. You were one that they watched growing up. And these are gentlemen that are still in the sport today. What does it mean for you and your family to know that not only did you build a legacy, but you left a stamp in people's hearts, thoughts, minds, and memories?
Wow. You know, holy cow, Don, that's pretty deep. Like I don't think I've really thought of it as that, or laying down a stamp, or you know what my legacy was really going to be. I just tried to fight hard and never leave anything in the dressing room. Try to make sure that the fans came out of there whether I won or lost, enjoying themselves and having a good time. It was that was a very big thing for me. So, you know, looking at it in the light of like having a legacy that I actually laid down a little bit, that's I'm honored to have done anything like that. I think that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah,
it really is. You know, Scotty, I loved your career. And in a way, I'm enamored with it because I go back and you didn't fight. I mean, you fought for a while, but as a professional, you retired in 2002. What was it that had Scotty Olsen take a step away from the sport of boxing? What was it that transpired in your heart that made you realize that you were done in the sport, and you had to transition yourself into life?
Well, Don, I truthfully, when during my last fight, I had a little bit of a argument, but my last fight I ended up losing. It was a little bit controversial as I wasn't able to prepare very well for that fight, but I still took it like a fighter should. But with that fight, right after, and I had got stopped by a future world champion, Steve Molitor, I had moved up 3 or 4 weight divisions to fight him. So it was a little bit hard, and I didn't want to retire. But my coach, Joe McCoffey, he told me, "Well, that's it, you're done," you know. I didn't want to hear that. That's for sure. I knew I still had a lot of fight left in me, but my body wasn't able to handle the rigors of the training anymore at the intensity that I would have had to train at. I just my body was starting to slowly fade, and every time I used to work out at that time, and years before, and I would get muscle soreness, you know, to work out hard, get some muscle soreness. It got to the point where every time I got sore, it was an injury that would take time to heal. And my fights were getting too far apart, and where it wasn't quite safe for me to continue at a really high level. Just my volume of fights was significantly dropping from hand injuries or from a back injuries. And you know, if that sort of answers that question. So in terms of retirement, I didn't want to retire, but even with all the injuries and all that stuff, I just still didn't want to pull the plug. But, I was a pretty new father at that time. I think my kids were 1 and maybe 3 years old. So I figured, maybe I should do the right thing, pull myself back. Hopefully I have something better to do with my life or something I can do with my life that I can use my speaking ability with. So I didn't want to lose that. I didn't want to lose my speaking ability altogether. It's already slow enough. And what? So I quit while I was ahead.
I love it. You know, you're a humble man in your walk and a tremendous aspect of the sport. You know, the other night, I watched a fight, and this is why I kind of brought up society a little bit. I watched a young man of 19-0 and Ryan Garcia go out there and destroy Fonseca in the first round. You know, I put out a post in some of the fight groups only to hear, "Oh, he's trash, he's this, he's that." You know, first and foremost, that hurts me, because anybody that goes beyond a 9-to-5, anybody that dedicates their life to a sport, you know, whether it be MMA, boxing, jiu-jitsu, or whatever, you know, nobody should ever disrespect them unless, you know, they truly have it coming, which Ryan Garcia didn't. I thought it was a tremendous knockout from an up-and-coming aspect in the sport. What are your thoughts on the way the sport is portrayed against these new and up and coming, you know, champions that are on the rise?
Well, I think they're like with Ryan Garcia, like that was a little bit of a step up in competition, I think, a little bit for him against Fonseca like guys like Ryan Garcia, he's just a brilliant fighter, very, very fast, very young, you know, of course undefeated still. So, he just has so much going for him with his career. I would like to see more fighters like him be able to challenge guys. Like maybe he'll fight Jorge Linares next. So maybe that'll be a great fight. And I think some of these up-and-coming fighters, instead of getting babied too much, it's nice to see them thrown in just a little bit more. And this was a very early win for for Ryan. So he was lining up that left hook, threw it a few different times, and it just didn't quite land until the last one, and that was the end of the night.
Yeah, you know, it was a beautiful punch, because with Ryan Garcia, you know, he's got it comes out soft, but he has the ability to change the angle on that left hook and the jab, and it's just something that's beautiful. It kind of reminds me, I'm going to take you a step back in time, because, you know, a lot of people don't realize that aren't true boxing fans, that it's not like MMA, it's not like any other sport. Yeah, you could get to 13-14-0, and you still really haven't faced a true challenge. And people are probably scratching their head going, what are you talking about? Well, boxing's done a little bit different, people. You know, what I love about it is they build the fighter. They build the gladiator. You know, and you truly had your first true test, in my opinion, against Adoy and Dujar. Would you say that that was truly the defining moment in Scotty Olsen's career moving forward?
Yes, I would. I would, Don. Well, in fact, I'll take it back one fight before. And, you know, BoxRec has his record as not being very good, but it was better when I fought him. Like, a little bit some issues with his record of unverifiable fights and things. So anyway, but so I fought this guy named Roman Solis, and Zeke Luna from Alice, Texas, brought him up, and they put me in top rank, put me in pretty tough there. He had a lot of time to train for the fight, so did I. I was in top condition. He was certainly in top condition. And I think that was my first war, because I knocked him down in the first round. And by the sixth round, he had me out on my feet. And I came rallied back to finish the fight in 10 rounders and win. I didn't know it, but my eye socket's orbit had been broken. And I didn't know it at that point until years later. But when I fought Andujar, Dio Andujar, that was one tough guy from the Philippines. They're all good fighters from there. You know, you don't see very many bad ones anyway. And Andujar, the top rank, you know, it was time. I was, you know, 14-0 or so like that, around that period, that time. And it was time to throw me in. And they did the right thing. They built me up. You know, I got a little bit of confidence from those earlier fights and earlier wins. I learned how to carry my opponent a little bit to get some rounds, get a little bit of television exposure, not just go ahead and try to bomb guys out in the first round. You know, I learned a lot about fighting, and not had I just knocked guys out in the first round every single fight, well, I would have got into an Andujar fight or a Roman Solis fight, and I would have lost them, because wouldn't have had any seasoning. So the top rank moved me properly, and Bruce Trample, he did a really good job at picking the guys. And but when they started to pick the tougher guys, it was okay. You know, it's on, man. I'll fight him, but because Andujar fought me, and then like a month or two later, he went out and knocked out a friend of mine, one of my stable mates, Eddie Cook, who had become WBA bantamweight champion of the world. So he stopped him, and the guy was no joke. But I rallied the storms and was able to win.
You know, hearing you speak, it's tremendous, because, you know, we've kind of jumped here and there, but we're still getting to the point where we're going to get to. You know, aspects of boxing is where I got my start. And, you know, I guess the true boxing aficionados will get this. But, you know, you speak of Jerome Coffey, tremendous individual in life. And a lot of people really don't understand or give credit or a statement to those that have stood by them gave them the words of intent or just straight told them the harsh reality of their career or their thoughts. But what type of knowledge did Jerome Coffey instill in the Bulldog?
Well, Jerome Coffey was essentially just one of the guys in the gym still fighting. And I had been trained up to about my first 23 fights from former bantamweight champion of the world, Richie Sandoval. So it got to the point where, you know, I was learning so much with Jerome just in between rounds that I made the switch, had Jerome take care of things in the corner for me and stuff. And so Richie was then not my trainer. We are still friends today, and he taught me how to fight a little Mexican style. I guess you'd say that. So Jerome Coffey, what he brought me into understanding how to mix up my power, you know, tap, 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 boom, tap, 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 boom. So I wasn't just throwing bombs all day long and making myself tired. And that was a big thing. He taught me that a little bit of different slickness. Like a lot of my fights aren't on YouTube. I will get them on there, though. Now, if you look at some of these fights, I was a little more defensive minded. It was sort of called aggressive defense. So I'd always come forward throwing hard shots, but I was trying to get away from the shots as I came in. So it was sometimes fairly well. So there are some clips of me with some pretty slick, like I was certainly not a Pernell Whitaker, you know, but I was pretty good for whatever my style was. So I still don't know who has the style that I fought like. I'm still trying to figure that out. It might be a cross between a few fighters. But anyway, Jerome Coffey, he was teaching me how to mix up my power. He taught me some slickness. And this from rounds and rounds of sparring with him. He taught me how to, you know, hit fighters on the hip and when to hit them, you know, in the hip when the referee's on the other side so they can't see a hit in the hip and not just hitting the hip but coming back with a shot. So he taught me how to bump people off of me better where I'd be really close and I, instead of smothering myself, Jerome would have me just give these guys a bump and then to hit off my bump. So I was punching off my bump so that I wouldn't get, it wasn't just blatant pushing. So I'd bump and then throw a shot. So I'd give myself a little better angles, but a little more punching room. So, you know, there were, and just a little bit more defensive stuff. I think my combinations became a little bit more diverse. Not that I threw a lot of combinations, like I was a kind of a 1-2 punch combination guy, but I actually started to mix before. It was right hand, left hook, right hand, left hook. Well, now sometimes then I learned to do some body shots in there. And I know it sounds pretty simple, but you know, it wasn't 7 punch combinations for me. And sometimes I would just continue punching like a really long combination until the guy would go down. So that was, I guess I was one of my assets.
I love it. You know, Scotty, you had an amateur career, but 4 years into your pro career, you got an opportunity, a tremendous opportunity against Roger Espinola for the International Boxing Organization World Flyweight title, and you came out victorious. What did that moment mean for you, your family, and the country you represented?
Well, prior to that, Don, you know, I had doctors saying that I should retire because of my hands and a couple other injuries. You know, I had to beg for the opportunity to have another fight with the commission here. So when I wasn't getting any of these title shots, you know, we had Rodolfo Blanco, we had Dave McCauley from Ireland, who we were trying to fight on St. Patrick's Day. We had, you know, it was just whatever was happening, we just had some really, really bad luck solidifying a network title fight. So I would be on possibly on ESPN, but we were trying to get on NBC, ABC, or CBS at that time. So we were trying to get on those kind of fights to give me a little, not that, and, you know, and I don't think it would give me any more exposure than ESPN. But we were, those are the networks that, that Top Rank was dealing with right then, as well as ESPN. So, you know, I had a, oh, gosh, I don't know, where am I at here? Just want to make sure I'm answering the right question.
Oh, I just,
you got to help me.
I just asked you, what did it mean?
Oh, about the country.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I wasn't getting the title fights. Finally, the IBO allowed me to fight for its world championship. You know, I was ecstatic because it was a world championship. You know, there was myself, James Toney, I think Lennox was IBO champion. So it's like on the fifth on the list out of the top five or seven or however many world champions you have. But, you know, it's not the belt doesn't make the fighter. The fighter makes the belt.
Amen.
So I thought if I, you know, if I could win it, I would be helping that organization at some step of it. Like, I consider myself true world champion. Whether I wasn't getting any of these other fights, that was, you know, I said, fine, I'll be the champion of this, and I'll defend it as long as I can and be a proud champion and a good champion and defended it five times. So winning the title, I had surpassed what doctors expected me to achieve. I proved some of them wrong. And not only did I win, but then I held it for like 4 years. So, you know, quitting wasn't in my repertoire of things to do. You know, I didn't want to give up on myself, and I was very stubborn. I think it continued onto bigger things with Canada. I think with more Canadian fighters. I think it rallied a little, some of the Canadian fighters around the country. You know, I think I created some excitement in the States, not just in Canada. So I'm sure there's a few guys from the States that enjoyed watching me fight that I might have given a little inspiration to. You know, inspiring people is fantastic if it can be done, and if anybody was inspired by anything I did, that's great. But you know, for Canada, if I was holding a hockey stick and could do what I did on the ice, like, yeah, I would be a Canadian icon. You know, so I consider myself more popular in the States than I am in Canada, because, you know, it's hard because boxing wasn't the number one sport, and but they still gave me quite a bit of attention. So I'm hoping some good things will come back to me for having defended the title pretty much exclusively in Canada, I think, once I won the title. So that was a nice thing. I brought fights back here to give a little bit of a presence to the sport.
Yeah, because if you really look back in boxing history, you know, it's warriors and aspects of the sport like you that really showed others in Canada that you can achieve your dreams, you can become what you want to be. And, you know, that's what I think was so great was – One of the people that I look up to in life, his name is Dallas Cook, and
mm-hmm.
He commented, you know, I watched all of his fights, man. I love that guy. That guy was a scrapper, and this is a man of very few words. You know, you get that because you're in, you know, you've lived the sport, so you understand that. There's a lot of aspects like that in boxing. There's men that are very, very short on compliments, very short on saying things. But, you know, he came out on a limb and said he appreciated what you brought to the sport. You know, Scotty, you know, life changes and we evolve and we grow. And of course, you're not in the sport anymore. But let's think for a moment. You walk into an old stomping ground or a boxing gym or just something that was correlated with your career. What is the greatest memory that comes to heart?
I've been into my home gym here. Not very often. It's only about 3 miles from where I live, and I haven't gone to visit very often. It brings back so many memories of actual my first initial coach, who was Paul Horty. You know, I loved him, and he was my best friend. So it was, you know, walking into that gym, that's the first thing I think of with going into there. It's like memories of Mr. Horty knowing that he yelled at me loudly in every corner of that gym. I don't know if that's sort of answering the question, but I remember I can visualize the training that I did in there, and you know, I think the most memorable for me. I've been back to where the it's called the Shaw Conference Center, where I had some of my fights here in town as well. So at the conference center, there continues to be professional fights there, and I think to myself, you know, well, when I fought here, there was more people, but there was nothing like whether I was in Vegas or some of those states in California and stuff. But when at home, when they would go, Scotty, 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 you know, there was nothing like that in the world. So going to that kind of a place, like where I had some of my pro fights at, you know, I had that. I always dreamt of my name being called out like that, and it happened. It took me a while, but it happened. And yeah, that was probably. Every time it was said, it was the biggest blessing I think I've ever received. It's got to be one of them. What a compliment. It was just lit up like a Christmas tree when I fought. A lot of atmosphere, Don.
I love it. You know, champ, my show is really about life and different aspects, and we share all different things. You put out a statement the other day that it touched my heart, because it was adversity that you had to walk through to come up with this realization or this aspect that you perplexed on social media. You know, the statement was, I've won some boxing stuff for sure, but this year of 2014 brought me as much, if not more, pleasure than any boxing title. And super stiff competition, I was able to be top salesman for the company that you worked for. And you held it for a third of the year, but then adversity struck. You had cardiac arrest. What was it like for you, champ, to feel like you were on top of the world and then have to rebuild yourself from the bed up?
Like built from where I was doing well and successful, very successful as a car salesman, and then had the heart attack, like from that point?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes. Well, you know, it was so difficult when I had quit boxing and I had no idea what I was going to do. Got into car sales, focused on it, tried hard, put that bulldogism in there, and I made a great career out of that. So, and it was so strange, because leading into, I think I won the first 3 months of the year as a top salesman, and then I was number one in November. Every month of that year, I was giving all the salesmen a run for their money, and I really did. And I was, you know, I might have lost by like one deal for a lot of those other months. So when January came of 2015, and that was, we got into about 3 weeks of it, somewhere around the 18th or so of the month, and I had this, I worked all day, the whole Saturday. I went to a friend's birthday party for an appearance, and then I came home, and then it nearly took my life. So just from having that, you know, talk about kind of getting into the, you know, because you're happy because I was happy that I'd lived through it. You know, I had some gratitude, but that gratitude is often a little bit hard to show, because you're also, your confidence is down. You start thinking about your actual mortality or morality. Mortality is kind of in question, you know. When is this going to happen again? So dealing from that on an emotional point of view, emotionally, I think is even harder than the physical part of recovery. You know, emotionally is it, because if you're emotionally strong, I think you can recover physically better. But, you know, I was emotionally very down, very down, and not feeling too good about what I thought my prognosis was, being a Dr. Doolittle as I am to myself. But, you know, I had a hard time coming back from knowing that I had and it got a little bit worse over the course of that year. The first year after my cardiac arrest, I had a little bit of a hard time because I started to see things. I started to become very impulsive and maybe not so nice. And things would just come out of my mouth really sharply, and they were hurtful to some people. So I had a long ways to go to dig myself up from that, and not remembering, my short-term memory was off, and not coming back to me. So I was in a bad situation. So once I got my mental strength back a little bit, I started to get more confidence with more classes that I took from the Brain Care Center and rehab therapy and all that stuff. And then I got I think I was able to heal up a little bit better, maybe a little better physically, just with my mindset.
You know, you've created such a path in the sweet science. I believe the third or fourth time I've had you on my show, and each and every time, you know, it's never the same. It's always a different bulldog, and I love it. But, you know,
oh, thank you.
Back in 2001, 2002, you know, you posted a video of you getting some rounds in with champ Olga Rosa Heron. What does it mean?
Yeah.
What does it mean for you to, you know, experience those moments, and then here we are now in 2020, to get an opportunity to look back at that aspect of who you were, sir?
Wow. It's, you know, it's hard not to live in the past, because I haven't really done a whole bunch I haven't done anything of great significance like I consider my boxing career to be. I haven't done that since I retired from boxing. You know, I guess maybe that is just a little bit plainer now. So looking back, it's hard not to live in the past, but it's nice to see those. It wasn't like, if you wanted to have a video back in 2001, if you wanted to have a video, like, it wasn't going to be on your phone where you could just, you know, you had to bring a video camera, man. And you had to video the damn thing. The same thing, that's why there's not a lot of clippings of of my career in training. I just didn't have, you know, I didn't have a videographer or anything. So looking back, and I was doing some rounds with Olga, and she was an aspiring boxer, and eventually in turn pro, and she was doing well, and it was nice to give her some rounds and get a little bit of bouncing around. I was a little tough on her. Yeah, at times that was a real easy part of the session. Like I came across a little bit more bullyish if more of it was shown. But she used to bring it, and she was tough. And I enjoyed sparring with women. I did that throughout the end of my career from about 1995 until my retirement in 2002. So yeah, these women were really good, but it's so nice to have a couple clips of a few things that I did in the past to see, you know, did I have any flow back then? I wasn't just a stiff fighter. You know, I had a little bit of flow about myself, and I have a few things in the training downstairs in the basement that I'll end up posting. So I'm hoping that that some. Some of the younger fighters can look at some of this and want that for themselves too. You know, just want it for themselves. Create their own memories, or create some things happening that they will become memories down the road. You know, those are blessings.
Yeah, they truly are. You know, and I had to chuckle a little bit when you talk about back in those days. You know, because it's true. It's you know, well. As a photographer that's been in the sport for a little over 24 years now, you know, people don't realize that back in those days it was 35 millimeter, and we didn't have the ability of having a video camera or having, you know, a digital camera. It wasn't, you know, or a cell phone that we could just, you know, snap a picture and then post it on social media. There wasn't even social media back in those days.
No. No, it was like a phone call, wasn't it, Don? A phone call, or
you had a landline, or you had nothing. That's the crazy thing. But the thing I'm getting at is, you know, I've watched as you have the sport evolve. I've watched things change. I've watched life grow, and you know, I look at my years in the sport, and there's very few moments that truly define me. And, you know, I've been asked on shows, and people ask me questions all the time on what my thoughts are in life and, you know, what my take-backs are. But truly, there is no take-backs because I'm always moving forward. You know, I'm here for the fighter. I'm not here for me. But when Scotty Olsen sits down and you get that brief moment, and you relish in that thought of your path and your walk in the sweet science, how blessed do you feel, sir?
You know, I guess from, like, I certainly athletically didn't have a lot going for me. I was always very small, just 5 feet tall, and you know, not a lot of there were never any real expectations on me to ever become anything very good at anything. so I had to create my own, or I think it was sort of some divine intervention there that helped me create a goal for myself. And at that time, you know, I looked at some boxing magazines and some boxing books, and it was pictures of Rocky Graziano and Tony Zale and those kind of pictures, and Rocky Marciano. And I had already known of the career of Ray Boom Boom Mancini and his Arturo Frias fight. And so I knew there was so much of that stuff. Where am I at here? Yeah, help me out there, Don. I think I just asked.
Just, just, you know, what moments, you know, do you relish the most?
Yeah. I think once I started sort of broke away from I wanted to be, you know, one of the biggest things to me that I think I've done is when people think of fighters, they think of boxers, and there's a bit of a bad stereotype or a little negativity, a little stereotype-ish stuff that is not very nice to fighters. And I always wanted to be a fighter that would sort of break that stereotype where people would say, oh, Scotty's a good guy, and, you know, not think of me as a bad person outside of the ring. I had my bad moments in the ring, you know, where I didn't really, you know, sometimes I didn't care about if my opponent ended up getting up because he would talk badly about me. So, you know, those were some of the things. Like, I lost at the Olympics to Carbajal, so I didn't get a. That was my third fight at the Olympics I lost. So yeah, I wasn't too proud of that moment. But I was proud at, looking back now, I'm the most proud of not giving up and not conceding to public opinion or to the media or to the doctors that said I couldn't or shouldn't do it. You know, I pushed that all aside and rose above that, and rose above. I didn't let anybody set limitations on what I thought I could accomplish. And I think I'm most proud of doing that throughout my career.
It's tremendous, champ. You know, I love you, buddy. You just, you're just the greatest. I mean, because you speak from the heart. And, you know, I interview thousands of fighters, you know, a year, and, you know, there's some special fighters that truly mean something to you, and you just happen to be one of them to me, man. You really are. I could talk with you for hours, but you know,
Love right back to you, Don.
Appreciate you, sir.
Yeah, love right back.
You know, the great aspect that you brought to the sport was later defined through, you know, your children and family. You know, you've became an icon to many. You know, if anybody goes to your page, they can see that people have never forgot who the Bulldog is or what he created in the sport. You know, it's kind of a whimsical question that I'm going to ask you here because, you know, I don't think I've ever asked a boxer this, but it happened in your career. It happens in many people's careers. They just don't really want to talk about it. You know, what was it like for a young Scotty Olsen finally stepping up into the pros and getting to, you know, actually face the people that you looked up to, and now they became your rivals? What was it like having your idols become your rivals, sir?
That's a great question. I'll guarantee I haven't been asked that one before. I think it must be sort of like the movie business or the acting business. And you know, you're growing up watching movies, and all of a sudden, you're actually acting next to Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, like it. So. But in positivity. So with this sport, when I've had, you know, I've always loved, actually. We fought so many times. Michael Carbajal and I, we fought a lot, and I've just the rivalry part. It was always the competitive one, and we always wanted to beat each other or have, you know, an edge here and there, but. That would have been probably one of my biggest sort of people that I knew that we had a rival of. But it was for me, it was like, I might have said this to you before, Don. I'm fighting Michael Carbajal finally as a pro, and we're bouncing in the ring before the fight was about to start. And, like, I know I'm in some weak condition because I was so tired from making the weight, but, there's almost a smile on my face. And I look over to Michael, and Michael's bouncing up and down, and he's looking like he's so serious. Like, it's only a fight, Mike. Come on. So I can't really say I had that many rivalries. But they were always it was more positive energy with the rivalry. Like, I lost a fight to Jorge Luis Roman, tough fight. Fought him at the LA Forum, broke my hand early. And Jorge Luis Roman, he ended up getting a split, some kind of decision, which was not just, in my opinion. So as soon as I won the world title, the IBO world title, I made my first defense against him. So that rivalry, it was nice. It was a really, really good feeling to fight somebody who had beaten me before and to avenge a defeat and putting it all on the line. All I had was the IBO title to put on the line, but I put it on the line. And, I was really, I liked him too. My manager, Bruce the Mouse Strauss, used to say, well, I never knocked out anybody I didn't like. Something like that. So, I don't know. Well, I just talked to Mouse a few days ago. Yeah, he's doing really well too.
Well, you're lucky. Get a hold of Bruce the Mouse Strauss is like pulling the tooth out of a tiger's mouth, you know?
Yeah, he's pretty reclusive. He's reclusive.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up because Matt Farrago from Ring 10 hit me up last year and said, Don, we want to give recognition and an award to Bruce the Mouse Strauss, but we can't find him. And as you know, I used to do the show with Barry back then, and so me and Barry, we jumped on it. We were able to locate where he was staying. But as you know, Bruce likes to just get up and leave on a moment's notice. He doesn't like to let anybody know where he's going or anything. So, I told him, well, we found him. I could give you his number, but they said he's not going to be back for 3-4 weeks. So I don't know what to do for you, but at least I located him. That is one crazy guy that just you cannot find. I mean, I've always wanted him on the show, but I'll work on him. He's reclusive, and you got to respect that in life and in the sport aspect, because you and I both know what the sport can do. Everybody thinks I'm this extroverted person, but I'm truly an introvert. I go out every weekend and I do what I'm supposed to do because it's my job, but on my time off, I just like to be alone. It's like I don't want all the lights. I don't want all the camaraderie. And I think it's because we look at the sport as it's our job, it's our profession, but we love it, but we also have a life away from the sport. Scotty, I want to ask you one more question before we kind of wrap things up here. I kind of formulated a little bit earlier, but I want to expand the aspect to it. Throughout life, there's those that always stick with us. There's ones that never stand in front of us. They never stand behind us. They always stand on our side. They whisper words of intent. They whisper the truth into our ear. They push us when we need that little nudge in life. And a lot of people don't give the fighters the opportunity to thank those types of individuals that have come across your path in life. And I'm sure there's many, but if you would like to correlate a statement to those that always stood by the Bulldog's side, champ, the floor is yours.
Oh, it'd be a pretty, wow. Don, that's why I love you. You're giving me things to think about as well. you know, if I, my, getting to where I've become or was able to, or getting to what I was able to achieve, you know, I had a, you know, like I was fortunate and blessed to have a great mom, great dad, two great brothers, both older than me. You know, I had a great family, the family support and people out there cheering for me because the people on the baseball diamond, they, you know, I'd have all my family come out to see me play baseball, and I would be sitting on the bench the whole time. You know, it was just brutal. Those were really hard times. So in these sports, and you know, my family came out and they weren't allowed to see me do anything. And then when I finally started fighting, it was the only thing that I did that I did okay. You know, and then I excelled because I trained hard and I worked hard toward achieving stuff. But my family, you know, my family, and then my second family is my wife and my two kids. You know, they. My wife was there since she was 14 years old, so she was in the picture and the love of my life from that period of time, and she just happily had her 50th birthday. So my wife knows all the struggles and a lot of the stuff I went through, and she's not, what did my trainer Jerome Coffey used to say, she's not new to this, she's true to this. So. Yeah, so yeah, so you know, and then I had great trainers, Paul Horty, my first trainer. You know, I had somebody who knew what he was doing, who gave me every ounce of everything, and all I had to do was try my best to do what he told me to do, and I would be successful. So then it comes to Top Rank, really. It really comes down to Top Rank, and we had KO Boxing here in Canada, so that would, they blessed me with being able to defend my title here a little bit. But Top Rank, you know, between Bruce Trampler, Matchmaker, Lee Samuels, Bob Arum, and all of my friends at Top Rank, they really moved me properly. My trainer Richie Sandoval, my trainer Jerome Coffey, you know, the two huge assets in my life and in my career. You know, these guys really, really put it, really helped me to see that I could achieve more. You know, but Top Rank moved me properly. Mouse, the Bruce, the Mouse Strauss, I love him so much because he was what you call, I didn't have a brave manager. Brave managers get their fighters hurt. He wasn't a brave manager. He wanted to me to be in fights that I figured to win. I wasn't guaranteed to win, but I figured to win. So he wanted me in fights that I figured to win, and how could I put it? And if I wasn't figuring to win, that they were at least hitting me up with a whole bunch of money. You know? So that I would get paid for you know, for my efforts, you know. So he wasn't a brave manager, and he protected me. And because of him, and because of my trainers, all three of them, in my career, I was able to. Well, I'm proud to say that I can still formulate some sentences. I still forget sometimes what I'm saying, and forget. Well, I'm a little forgetful, but you know. So that on, and all the fans, and the fans wouldn't be my fans if there wasn't media. Media was the, you know, I had the best newspaper articles in Las Vegas, and I had the best newspaper articles since billions of them in my hometown in Edmonton and throughout Canada. You know, I hit some American press stuff. You know, and then from Al Bernstein to Barry Tompkins, you know, they helped my career. Michael Buffer, just announcing, you know, talk about getting a fire lit under your butt. You know, you get, have Michael Buffer announce you anywhere in anything, and then it gives you a big, it's a big up. It's a big up, man. And you know, so because of the media was so good to me, and I tried my best to give the media good things to write about. So it was, I helped out that a little bit too. But they helped me create a fan base. Because without television and without media and television and paper and print details, you know, people don't know about you. You know, I can't even imagine how popular I would be right now if it hadn't, if I had been living in the social media era. I think I would have lots of followers for sure. But yeah, I mean, when it's all said and done, anybody who's ever enjoyed watching me fight, even if they were watching to maybe see if I would lose, and or thought maybe I was overrated or thought I was underrated, or that, you know, anybody who I guarantee if you thought I was underrated, you at least enjoyed the fight, or I was overrated, you at least enjoyed watching me fight. And those were special times. Yeah.
They truly were special times, and my friend, you'll never be forgotten. You truly, I love you, man. That's all I could really say. It's like,
the only one that makes me cry I got misty there a little bit. So, you know, I can't tell you how hurtful it is for people to come out to support you and you can't even show them how bad you are.
But, hey, I know the feeling.
God,
you know, I know the feeling. You know, it's like people don't understand that in the beginning when I came into the sport, you know, photographers weren't to be seen. They couldn't speak to the fighters. We were shadows. You know, that's truly all we were. And so a lot of my memories, people ask me, what were your memories of the sport? And I really don't have any. I was doing a job, you know. Granted, I wish I could take pictures with me and all the fighters, but I think, honestly, I think James Toney, you know, gave me the greatest memory of my life in the sport of boxing. You know, he said, Don, I don't do it very many times, but he goes, I'm going to give you a moniker. I'm going to give you a nickname. And here I'm sitting, I'm waiting for this tremendous nickname, thinking I'm going to get, you know, he's going to give me, you know, praise and all this. And he truly did, but he said, I'm going to call you Dandy Don. And I was like, and I died, bro. It was funny because every time he would come on my show after that, the first thing he would say is, what's up, Dandy Don? And I was just like, you know, it's moments like that.
That's
kill me. Yeah, it is. Because James Toney is James Toney. But then you go, like, to the moment I met Muhammad Ali, to meeting Leon Spinks. And Leon Spinks became a great friend of mine. And he was training at a gym in the town that I live in. And one night we came back from the bar when I was still drinking. I don't drink anymore, but, you know, Leon had fell asleep sucking his thumb. And we ran down to the corner store and we bought one of those disposable cameras. And we took a picture of Leon sucking his thumb. And instead of being mad, Leon took all the pictures. We plastered him everywhere in the gym. Instead of him being mad, he took out a black Sharpie. And he said, he put Sweet Dreams from Leon Spinks. And he handed me a copy of it. And it meant everything in the world to me because when I met Muhammad Ali, it was back in 1994. And he was he was done from boxing. He was just doing speaking engagements. And I was an engineer at the Hilton, and I had to key off the elevator for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, he asked me where was I going to be at 9 o'clock, and I told his security I'd be in the engineering office. I thought that would be the end of it because, you know, in this business, people forget. Well, at 9 o'clock, I hear this tap on the door, and I open up the door, and there's two bodyguards and Muhammad Ali. And he does the rope-a-dope, and he pats me on the side of the head, and he gives me a kiss on my forehead. And at that moment, I go, I would never have fought this dude, no matter how big I was, because I don't think people realize how big Muhammad Ali's hands truly were. That man's hands covered from my chin to the back of my head. And I was like, man, I thank God you're hugging me and not hitting me, bro. But he signed a book of the Muslims for me. And when I came here to Springfield, I had Leon Spinks sign the other side because they fought each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And truly, that's the one piece of memorabilia that I will never let go. I'm going to be buried with that. Nobody will ever take that from me. You know,
that is what a wonderful, wonderful story. Holy cow.
Yeah, you know.
Wow.
People don't realize how small the world truly is, and the sport of boxing truly is even smaller. But on my final question of this interview, you know, because I've had you on here an hour already, champ, but when it's all said and done,
mm-hmm.
how would Scotty the Bulldog Olsen like to be remembered?
Well, thank you for asking, Don. Thank you. Thank you, my friend. And you know, I think it's contained, but I feel like I have, you know, I still have that a pretty big ego and stuff, and you know, God kept me humble, and you know, thanks to God, I was able to do a lot of things. You know, I, you know, that is such a hard question for me. You know, I feel that I should be thought of as being one of the top fighters of my era. It would be nice, you know, if I wanted people to, what I wanted them to think, I would like them to perceive me as being a super good fighter, like a super good fighter. I wasn't, you know, there's a lot of fighters that do come and go, my run wasn't all that long. But I think it created an impact. But I would like to be considered a super good fighter. Like, I fought Carbajal, and had I fought Chiquita and maybe a couple other guys, maybe I would have been in that International Boxing Hall of Fame. I'm honored to have got what I was able to achieve. I've been very blessed. I've tried to be pretty giving. I've tried to give boxing a positive stereotype. I think I've changed a lot of people's opinions on how they perceived fighters to be personality-wise. I've always given my time to fans, whether or not they stop me in the mall or stop me in a store, say hi to me, those kind of things. You know, I've always been very giving of my time, and I think that doesn't happen with every athlete in every sport. So I really tried to give a little bit back. I've given some stuff back to the sport as well, and I've done lots of charity stuff. So I would like to be thought of really as a super good fighter. Who is kind at times, never left anything in the dressing room. You know, I have a lot of love for a lot of fighters. Some of the ones that I wasn't able to fight, like Mark Johnson, Arthur Johnson, Johnny Tapia. There's a few that I wish I could have been in the ring with, but they just didn't turn out. So it's hard to judge me as a super good fighter without having had those fights. But I think I know, I, in my mind, I know where I sort of stand. I know I'm on a very small list of really blessed fighters, blessed from God to have achieved a few things.
Most definitely. Amen on that. You know, the thing of it is you know, you're so humble in so many ways. It's like, it's funny because I've interviewed everybody from Joey Giambra Sr., the uncrowned champion, to,
yeah,
you know, Livingston Brambles, to you name it.
Yeah.
But I enjoy my shows in boxing because that's where I got my start, and that's where my true true humility lies, is with the sweet science. You know, champ, as always, it's been an honor to have you on my show. You're truly a blessing in life. I'm going to pass the mic to you. If you have any friends or family, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program before we end it, the floor is yours, sir.
Well, you know, I'd just like to thank all the media for helping me with a fan base that enjoyed watching me fight, as well, fans. And it doesn't happen without the media, man. The fans have shown a lot of love and a lot of support for me, and those are really, really nice things. I'm writing my autobiography, Don, and I've been working on that for quite some time, and it's a slow process. But I'm more of a fighter, not a writer. so I'm hoping I can say a few things in that book, and things come out okay. I'm hoping to be able to express myself in a way and run through my bad times to my good times, and I hope that people will enjoy reading it once I can get that done.
Oh, amen. Where can my listeners and your fans find you on social media, champ?
Well, I'm the short, bald guy in the. No, I'm on Instagram. Yeah, I have Instagram account, so that's I guess that would be Bulldog Olsen or Scotty Olsen 12. Scotty Olsen 12, and I'm on Facebook. A lot of times I don't have a lot of room to add a lot of people on Facebook, but I have a Facebook account. You can Google some of my fights, and I didn't win them all, and I didn't post all of them. But there are fights that are on there. A few odd fights. I'm going to be putting more. So maybe I would be enlightened. I'd be honored if I was able to continue to put more of my fights on, and people would actually watch them, take a few minutes, watch somebody from a little while ago duke it out. And some of those fights are really good, so I think it would just be nice to be relevant enough for people to want to look at it. I guess that would be a blessing there.
You are too humble, brother. You are too humble. I love watching your fights. I love watching your posts. You know, Scotty, thank you again for sharing who you are with my listeners, with your fans, and humbling an old man such as myself. You know, you're truly one of a kind, and I love you, champ, and I wish you the best of luck, and I can't wait till the next time we have you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Don McGuire. Man, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for giving a little time to a former fighter. Huh? That's a blessing.
I give you time 7 days a week, brother. You deserve it. On that note, thank you for joining the show, Scotty. I truly appreciate it. God bless you, brother, and I'll talk to you on the phone shortly.
God bless. Thank you so much, Don.
You got to hang up, because remember, I had to call you a different way this time. God bless you. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my sponsors for allowing me to have Scotty the Bulldog Olsen on. He's a tremendous, tremendous man. I want to thank Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez, the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie, and last but not least, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. On that note, have a good day, and God bless.
you all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress.